This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And the business at hand today is the business of recycling of precious resources. We have for thousands of years been consumers. And in the early years, it was generally things like food and maybe materials to build shelter. But later on, we began to consume significant quantities of natural resources, and it's actually been the last couple of hundred years out of the millions of years that we have been walking on 2 feet that we have peaked in productivity and in consumption of those natural resources. But more recently, even though we've begun to use more oil and gas, metals, water, wood, and a broad range of other non-renewables, there's a bright spot on the horizon because it has become more and more important to recycle these materials. Some states and communities have gotten good or better, a lot better at recycling. And so I'm very pleased to have as my guest today the executive director of the Georgia Recycling Coalition, Gloria Hardegree. Welcome to the program, Gloria.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Now, let's start off with a bit of a historical overview and a broad brushstroke description of what Georgia Recycling Coalition does. It's actually one of the oldest recycling organizations in the country, isn't it?
It is. We're in our 23rd year of operation this year. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We're called a state recycling organization. Almost every state has one. Our mission is to promote and enhance waste reduction and recycling statewide. We are membership-based. We have members that represent a wide range of people involved in this industry, including local, state, and federal government, the collectors, processors, and end users of these materials, trade associations, military installations, colleges and universities, and environmental nonprofits. So we're around 250 members right now, and we accomplish our mission via a variety of programs, projects, events, and partnerships. I think we're going to talk about a few of those today.
The members of the Georgia Recycling Coalition actually, and we'll get into it in a little bit later, they include major corporations that are, in some case, based in Georgia, or at least have a major presence in Georgia, and some of them are actually doing some pretty good things, maybe even leading the way, and as I said, we'll talk about that in a bit, but let's jump right into some of the areas that our listeners can relate to, because almost everyone, at least the overwhelming majority of folks that are listening, set the trash out, put trash in the trash can, which then gets set out and is collected by a variety of trash collection sources. Let's talk about residential recycling and what's going on with what is referred to as curbside pickup, and that includes, the vehicles that come down your driveway and actually aren't picking up at the curb. They're picking it up near your garage or your backyard. But let's talk about residential pickup and what's going on these days. Are most communities, or at least a significant number, coming up with recycling techniques engaged in by the trash companies?
Well, the majority of curbside is handled either in contract for the local jurisdiction by a hauler, or it's handled by subscription service, which it is in a lot of communities where there are haulers that you can hire on your own and pay a monthly fee to. But curbside is growing nationwide, and it's certainly growing in our state. We've had several new programs come on and several ramped up versions of existing programs that have been refreshed over the years. But there are many ways to approach curbside. The one thing that people learn after a period of time is that you can go from twice a week service to once a week service if you are recycling and composting. Because if you are separating that material out, you don't have as much trash to throw away, and you can go to a once-a-week service. There's a little pushback on that because people like things to go away more quickly. I call it the magic curb. There's nothing very magical about it unless there's a thoughtful process involved before you magically place it out there. But there are a lot of ways to approach curbside recycling. Incentive-based is the new vogue way of incentivizing and motivating people to get involved. There are groups out there like Recycle Bank that provide incentives to individuals to put their cans out there to recycle more. They actually have RFID tags on the trucks and on the cans so they can measure what you're recycling, and they provide you with some sort of coupons or incentive-type things, similar to a flying Sky Miles type of program. Mandatory is another way to approach it. We do have one community specifically in the state of Georgia that has a mandatory recycling program, meaning if you don't put your recycling bin out there with materials in it, they don't pick up your trash on the same day when they come by. So mandatory. So we're looking at either the carrot or the stick, either the mandated or the incentive-based type of approach. One approach that we particularly like is called pay-as-you-throw or unit-based pricing, where it's a more equitable situation where you pay for your garbage service based on use, similar to the way you pay for your power, water, gas bill, where if you recycle more and you trash less, then you pay a lower fee. There are a lot of ways to set those things up, but that's generally speaking an overall description of it. The other way, other than curbside, is drop-off. In a lot of communities where it's more cost-effective or it's more efficient because it's a low population density area, drop-off centers, or we call them convenience centers in a lot of communities, are more effective. And people are used to bringing not only their garbage, but also their recycling, their yard trimmings, their used oil, all kinds of things to these convenience centers for drop-off. And then we get into the area of special events. Things like electronics and paint and used motor oil and household hazardous waste, what we call non-traditionals in our industry. They're special events that are either done by local jurisdictions or by nonprofit organizations to handle those materials.
You mentioned recycling centers, and I know that here in North Metro Atlanta we have some recycling centers, but there are others throughout the metro area and throughout the state. The recycling center that I'm most familiar with, which is actually very close to us here, recycles a broad range. Everything that you just mentioned is included, you know, from a plastic film to electronics, paper, cardboard, newspaper, magazines. Are most recycling centers now as diversified in what they'll collect and recycle?
Yes, and I think they're getting more and more diverse. When you look at the multifamily sector, for example, the condos and apartment buildings, that where there's not an ordinance in place requiring them to provide recycling on site, their only option is to go to a drop-off site. But traditional materials like the bottles and cans and paper and corrugated and plastics are collected at the curbside, but they're things that just can't be collected at the curbside. It's not practical, it's not safe, and it's not environmentally sound. So they have to be accepted at drop-off things, and that's things like electronics and paint. Obviously, you don't want to put a can of paint in your curbside bin because you know where it's going to end up. It's going to end up on your street down the road, strewn all over the road.
So, or batteries. Batteries is not a good thing to put into your...
Exactly. So there's certain things that really just cannot go into curbside bins because of the technology that's involved in sorting that out. We've gone to what we call single stream, meaning you can commingle everything in the bin. You don't have to separate everything out now like we used to in the early days of recycling with your glass bin and your plastics and can bins and your paper bins. So going to single stream has made it important for us that we follow the directions that our haulers give us and not put things in the bins that are not there. But drop-off sites offer that opportunity to have another location to take these materials.
Now, I'm most familiar with our our collection vendor, and that's Waste Management, which is one of the largest in the nation, if not the largest. And it's generally the two-prong approach of trash and garbage and then the recyclable bin, which includes metal and plastic and glass. Is there anything else that fits into that category?
Well, you've got your plastic bottles, your milk jugs and detergent bottles. You've got aluminum cans, steel food cans, glass bottles and jars, newspapers, magazines, corrugated. Those are considered traditional curbside materials.
So, and interestingly enough, I tend not to put in the paper products, but it would include the paper products,
of course,
as well.
Yes.
So those are the general categories. But one of the categories that really shouldn't go into that bin, and I'm sure that some people do include it, and that is plastic film. Is that correct?
Well, it varies, and I asked this very question myself at a meeting this week of our materials processing facilities, and they say it's a check locally question, because some materials processing facilities where these materials go when they leave your curb to be processed and baled and then sent to market, some of the facilities are more high-tech. They can handle the plastic film. Others cannot. But we do have a program in the state of Georgia called A Bag's Life, where if you're not allowed to put it in your curbside bin, you can take it to a local retailer. There's a whole list of those retailers. They're places that you probably visit every day, home improvement stores, grocery stores, even some office supply stores, where you can go and take film plastic back. And it's not just bags. It's everything. It's newspaper bags, dry cleaner bags, the wraps that come around paper products that you buy in your home, inserts that are in cracker and cereal boxes. There's a whole host of these on the website, abagslife.com, that you can find out where you can take a variety of film plastics for recycling. But we go back again to saying, follow the directions. What it says on your directions, either on the website or on the top of your can or in directions that your hauler has provided you, it tells you what you can put in the bin and what you can't put in the bin. And we suggest that be the way that you handle what you put out of the curb, is by following those directions. It's very important.
Now, there is a distinction for what kind of plastic film is recyclable and what is not. And I believe that in a recent presentation, you characterized the recyclable plastic film as plastic that might stretch. Is that right?
Right.
So there's a certain resilient quality to it,
the
which
litmus,
does include
yeah.
a thousand
yes.
or more household
right.
packaging.
Yeah, the litmus test is it can be included in the mix of all these different wraps and film plastics if it stretches. If it's a tear type of plastic, and if you can tear it like paper, then it's not really the same resin, so it's not really compatible. But you'll find that there are very few of those as compared to the volumes of the other materials that are the stretchy film.
We're going to be taking a break in a bit here, but when we come back, I would like to spend just a little bit of time talking about plastic bags, because I know that plastic bags are the bane of a lot of communities, and in fact, there was some discussion here in the local major metro county about legislation to inhibit the use of plastic bags. But in reality, it's the recycling of those bags that is the best approach. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that, including there are some communities that have managed to collect the critical mass of those plastic bags and are beginning to turn those into fuel. And you can tell us a little bit about that full range of what's going on with plastic bags. We're here with Gloria Hardigree, the Executive Director of the Georgia Recycling Coalition. We're talking about a broad range of important issues related to recycling. We'll be back with Gloria right after this break.
When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com. Have you checked out the only online guide where employers, health plans, brokers, and consultants can navigate private exchange and defined contribution markets? Browse PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com today. The emergence of private health insurance exchanges represents perhaps the most significant shift in how Americans purchase health benefits in years. As employers move their employee population into private exchanges, this trend is on a growth projection into the 2015 benefit year and beyond, according to research published by Allegis Technologies. Visit PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com today to browse our national searchable directory and for Healthcare Exchange Solutions magazine and newsletter. Be sure to submit your listing for inclusion in this groundbreaking guide at www.PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com. That's www.PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We've been talking to Gloria Hardigree, the Georgia Recycling Coalition, and we've been talking about different aspects of recycling. Recycling has become a critical part of what local communities, states, and nations are doing to recoup natural resources, essentially. A lot of people don't even stop to think that a plastic bag, those plastic bags that almost all of us have used or currently use when we bring groceries back or goods from a retailer, and in some cases, some communities have placed restriction on the use of those bags by the retailers, when in reality the better approach would be to just get good at the recycling of those plastic film bags. And Gloria, tell us a little bit about what some communities are doing to encourage the specific recycling of plastic film, and what are some of the new techniques and technologies behind the recycling of the plastic film?
Well, I'd first like to say that as a coalition, we don't support product use bans or even product use taxes. We support comprehensive recycling solutions. So we also suggest that people consider the hierarchy, which you've heard many times before: reduce, reuse, recycle. You know, reduce the amount that you generate, reuse when you can, when it's practical, and then recycle at the end. So through this program of A Bag's Life, the reason why these bag bans seem a little ludicrous in my mind is that they're just a very small part of a much larger array of these same film plastics that can all be recycled. And for people that don't know, what happens with plastic film is it's made into a lot of new products, which is what recycling is all about, which is when we look at the closed loop of the recycling symbol, that's what it means. It's like collect it, process it, remanufacture it, and then sell it as a new recycled content product. But the programs are there, and we can drop off this material, and in some cases you can put it in your bins. But it gets turned into a new product. It's called a composite lumber. They take this film plastic and they melt it down into pellets. They add it to a sawdust byproduct from some sawmills, and they make what's called a composite lumber that can be used in deck building. It's more durable. It lasts longer. It is less environmentally inhibitive because you don't have to put stains and things on it. It's also made into park benches, and plastic bags honestly get made back into new plastic film.
It's even structurally more sound in some cases, if I'm not mistaken. It's stronger than some lumber.
Yes, It's UV resistant. I mean, there are all kinds of advantages to using this type of product. But film to film is another thing that people don't understand. I mean, you may have a plastic bag from the grocery store, and that probably has recycled content in it. I mean, I see them all the time that say up to 20% recycled content included in this bag. When things get complicated in the film industry, though, we have other alternatives out there now in the form of new technologies. We always say that regardless of what the end of life of a product is, we want to make sure that it reached its highest beneficial use, not only economically but environmentally. So in the hierarchy of looking at things, highest beneficial use is the way that we look at things. A lot of times materials get contaminated, specifically plastics. And there's some new technology out there now which allows, which is a plastic to fuel form, because, you know, a lot of plastic is made from fuel type chemicals, so it can go back from to its original form back into fuel. There are a couple of companies here in Georgia now that are doing that exactly. They're in a testing mode right now because the type of resins that they're allowed to use based on their technology may vary. But we'll see, because things are moving along in that area where we actually, at the end of life, if there's not a higher use, then it can definitely go back into a fuel type product. And that's something that we should be looking at.
My understanding is that there are some of the waste collection organization, waste management in particular, has what must be regarded as pilot projects, because they're still relatively new, even though some of them appear to be effectively collecting a critical mass of plastic film that they're converting into a fuel, and that they're at least close to cost-effectively generating fuel for various communities. But that would definitely seem a good way to go. And a lot of consumers have never really given any thought to the fact that, you know, plastic film is derived from petroleum. Right. And at its base, the plastic film can be collected. And it goes back to the behavior of consumers. Mm-hmm. It has to... that magic, which is taking a moment to separate a recyclable material adequately so that it can be incorporated into a recycling program like one related to fuel, is the key. One last area of residential recycling, and it's something that has been around for, becoming somewhat popular in a few regions of the country, and that is composting.
Yes.
Farmers have been doing this and recycling of materials for ever, but it was only more recently that in some cities, residentially, people understood that, hey, I could take the leaves that I'm having the trash people pick up, and if I will separate them and create a composting system, and maybe even include some of the food garbage, mm-hmm. I can effectively create a mulch and a compost that I can use to fertilize my very own yard. Tell us a little bit what's going on with composting and what the Georgia Recycling Coalition is doing to encourage it.
Well, about a third, up to about 30%, and sometimes more, of the stream that we're creating or generating is made up of organics. And that can be the yard trimmings like the leaves that you mentioned. It can be storm debris if we have tornadoes or things like that. Or it can be food scraps from your kitchen. So it's only logical in my mind to take that material that came off of those products and to turn it back into the earth. And so that's what composting is all about. So backyard composting is very popular, especially among gardeners, because they know the value of the rich nutrients that were in those materials. And once it breaks down, they're able to add it back in as either a compost or a soil amendment or as a mulch. As far as municipal composting goes, it is growing in our state. We're in a process of a few growing pains with respect to the operational practices, which are causing some community pushback on some of these programs. But it is a growing area, and it's going to continue to grow as we look at all of these things that we used to consider things that were trash or garbage that we were going to send to landfills. We have to start rethinking now. We have to start thinking of all these materials as resources, as there is somewhere for all of this material to go, whether it is to a fuel, whether it is to a mulch or compost, or whether it is back into a new product. So composting is just another component of the bigger picture. We have an event every year called International Compost Awareness Week, which is the first week of May, and we go out and promote the benefits to compost. What people have missed the boat on, I think, in my mind, is the connection between compost and soil and water conservation, because if you apply compost, you are conserving water. Because it requires less water because it retains the water for longer. You also can use less pesticides and herbicides because it has a natural effect on your landscape. So there's so many advantages to compost and compost use that we're losing out on allowing these things to be sent to landfills, whether we do it in our backyard or whether we depend on a hauler to take it to a processing facility.
I also think that some people have this notion that composting has to be a very time-intensive, even elaborate process of tending to the composting process, which it can be for some who actually enjoy tending the process, so that they end up with a nutrient-rich end product that then is used to fertilize flowers and vegetable gardens in one's yard. But in reality, it could be done somewhat less in a less structured manner, aside from those giant branches and things that you want to have hauled off. There's just a lot of organic matter that can be put into a section of your yard and just dig a hole, kind of fill it in, till the hole, kind of rotate that in, as mulch, into your garden. If you think about organic material in the abstract as having nutrients, you realize you're having valuable nutrients carried off. But nevertheless, do most communities have a yard waste pickup process the way that we do in parts of Metro Atlanta, where you've got the general trash, the yes. recyclable materials, then a separate yard waste.
Most communities do have that type of separation if they have facilities for handling it. We have a few of those in Georgia. Some of the material is going for fuel sources right now. Some of it is actually going into compost. But we're going to be getting into new technology. It's not new technology. It'll be new to us here in Georgia, anaerobic digesters, where that material will actually be taken to facilities where it is inside buildings, broken down, have energy pulled off of it, and then the end product of that goes into composting to become a soil amendment later. But when you get into the chemical analysis of all this stuff, it's like there are only four components to compost. One is a carbon source, which is the woody brown material. One is a nitrogen source, which is what we call the green stuff, or the things from your kitchen scraps, vegetable peels, et cetera. And then you've got air and water. And that's it. So it can be as simple as you said. You dig a hole in the back part of your backyard and you start throwing it on there. You till it so you have air and you make sure it stays water but not soaked. So it can be a simple process, or you can go to a home improvement store and buy you the Taj Mahal composter of all times.
Yeah, and then you just you dig a second hole, and then in time you go use the stuff that looks like it's degraded from the first hole and spread it around your yard. We're going to be taking a break here, and then when we come back, I want to talk about the area of business recycling, which is also undergone an evolution to where we're recycling a lot of materials. and a smart way. We're here with Gloria Hardigree of the Georgia Recycling Coalition. We'll be back with Gloria right after this break.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving three right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gano. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host, and we're here with Gloria Hardigree, the Executive Director of the Georgia Recycling Coalition, and we've been talking about various aspects of what communities are doing and what the state of Georgia in particular is doing related to recycling, which is not unlike what a lot of states and communities are doing all around the U.S. And in other parts of the world. I want to talk about the area of business recycling just because there are a growing number of processes and technologies related to the recycling of materials that are collected from businesses. Let's just start off talking a little bit about offices and office settings.
The first thing that's important to know is that we can conquer the residential area, including multifamily, but more of the material is in offices and businesses than is actually in residential. So it's probably the most important new area for us to get involved in. Not that it's brand new, because there are businesses in our state and cities that have been recycling for years. But we're only at a national level right now of about in the early 30s, 32% recycling rate right now. And the goals are 50%, and the goals are, you know, zero waste, which is 95%. So we need to be looking at these office buildings. And there's several programs that we're involved in from commercial office buildings. One is the Better Buildings Challenge, which is an energy efficiency competition between some major cities. City of Atlanta is involved in that. And we've been working with them. Their focus is mainly on energy. There's some focus on water, but we've been working with them to get more of a focus on materials management, waste reduction and recycling. We think that's just as important in the realm of looking at a bigger picture than energy and water conservation. And they're certainly connected and have synergies. One of the ways that we have been doing that is through a national program that was initiated by Keep America Beautiful called Recycling at Work. And it's a program for businesses, government, schools, hospitals, and institutional organizations where we ask them to become pledge partners to pledge to increase their recycling by 10% over a two-year period. So if you're not recycling at all, that's going to be a really easy task. If you are already recycling, 10% is not that big of a jump, but it's something that we're going to provide the tools through this program for you, like templates and training webinars and employee engagement strategies, that being one of the keys, because often there are recycling programs in office buildings, but the employees aren't engaged. So you have to get them engaged in some way. In the program, they're also going to offer special discounts on bins and an exchange of ideas and best practices, and you can also earn national recognition for your business if you're involved in the program. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to recyclingatwork.org. But it's one of the ways that we're going to be interjecting this conversation more into the commercial office space and helping cities like, for example, the city of Atlanta has a zero waste goal by 2020. If we're going to accomplish that goal, then we're going to have to look into business recycling more aggressively.
Let's talk about the area of construction and demolition, Georgia, Gloria, because it's such a major aspect of what goes on in states like Georgia, where the economy is strong enough that even though, you know, we've had lulls in construction, both residentially and commercially, time marches on and building and construction marches on as well. And there are some major projects right now in the metro area with, I dare say, millions of pounds of materials, much of which is recyclable. And, you know, when we chatted off the air, you were explaining that there are these new approaches to recycling some of those materials that I think are a definite step in the right direction. Tell us a little bit of what's going on with Life Cycle Building Center, LEED, and Earthcraft.
Well, there are so many programs out there right now in this area that it's amazing. And we are actually a leader in the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia in this area. But construction and demolition, you get points under the LEED certification for recovering these materials and not sending them to a landfill.
And by the way, to remind listeners out there who have heard this on the program before, LEED is the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, and it's a building program that rates the level of environmental and energy design incorporated into a structure. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. That's one reason why this area has grown so much. Earthcraft Homes, similar type of situation where it's important that these materials either be recycled during the construction or demolition process, and that the materials that are made from recycled content are used in the building. So obviously, to get the recycled products, we have to have something to make them out of. So a lot of these materials are now going into facilities where they're being processed and made back into new products. One of the new, more innovative ideas that's happened recently, it's called the Life Cycle Building Center, and they basically go into deconstruction projects before there's demolishing of buildings or homes even, and pull out those materials that are valuable, that can be salvaged and can be reused back into new products. It can be anything from brick to air conditioning systems to cabinetry to the list is amazing. And if you go to visit their facility, you'll just be totally amazed at the materials that used to be landfill that are now being bought and used in new construction or in renovation. So this is a new way of looking at reuse as a vital part of what we do. A good example of this is looking at the water conservation of changing out toiletry in homes and businesses to low flow. When that happens, you end up with all these porcelain toilets that are all over everywhere that obviously we didn't want those to go back into being reused because there was a reason why we took them out to begin with. So now they can actually go to these facilities, be ground up, and they're used in things like road bag aggregate. So it's just a prime example of the crossover between water conservation, resource conservation, and how everything integrates and works together to make it easier and more environmentally friendly and more economical.
You know, this is a point where I say thank you to the Georgia Recycling Coalition and organizations like the GRC that are focusing on the broad spectrum of recycling technologies and techniques, because, you know, it's kind of pie in the sky to say, oh, yeah, let's take this porcelain toilet and use it in some recycled manner. But it's another thing to actually have a technology and a technique and a process for crushing that porcelain, mm-hmm. grinding it into a usable material that could be eventually used to help pave roads. So there's, you know, there's the great concept of everything is recyclable, but then there's the nuts and bolts of actually getting it done.
Yes.
And one of the things that the GRC does is make people aware that there are companies that are doing some really good things along the lines of recycling. Let's talk about did we cover hospitality specifically? Do you want to spend a little time, or should we move on to?
Well, I can give you a brief overview of hospitality industry here. We do have some efforts going on. We're talking in the hospitality industry, hotel, motel, restaurants, sporting venues, et cetera. But we do have some great programs going on. The National Restaurant Association has a zero waste zone program where they're going to be working with the city of Atlanta as one of the cities in the country that they chose to work with. So they will be doing some initiatives for reducing waste in these facilities, recycling, composting eventually. There's a broader spectrum of it in looking at water resources, energy resources, you know, less chemical use in cleaning products, et cetera. But overall, we'll be looking, from our perspective, at the recycling and composting part. Right now, the Georgia Restaurant Association is already involved in a program called Restaurant Recycling Made Easy. So restaurants can get involved with that program. But eventually, there is going to be more of a rollout of the National Restaurant Association Zero Waste Zone, and you'll be hearing more about that and seeing, like, some restaurants will actually be telling you more about what they're doing to reduce their waste.
Speaking of pie in the sky approaches to, or at least thoughts about recycling, you know, at one time we thought that recycling of biofuel or recycling of some of the oil that is used in the food preparation processes into biofuel was a little pie in the sky, but it's still growing. If I'm not mistaken, there's a collection effort that has gone on. There are private vendors now that are going around to the restaurants. Much easier than trying to recycle what you use at home, because we're talking about larger quantities and a cost-effective approach to recycling of fuels. Is that right?
Yes. Cooking oil is definitely an area that almost all restaurants are involved in doing now. In fact, it became so valuable a couple of years ago, they had to secure their collection bins in the backs of their restaurants because it was being stolen. There's always a backside to every, you know, positive thing that goes on. But, I mean, it is a very valuable commodity, and almost all of them are doing that now on a commercial level. On a home level, it's a little more complicated. A lot of Keep America Beautiful affiliates or drop-offs do it during, like, the holidays, especially Thanksgiving, when people are frying turkeys and things. But it is a little bit more complicated on the residential level.
You know, and if more people thought about it, you know, when those oils are going into the sewage system and it's clogging up sewers, you know, it has multiple benefits. If you're recycling it into biofuel and avoiding the dumping into the sewer system, there's a whole host of problems. It's not good for the environment, and it's not good for the sewage system itself. So that's a really valuable program. And then again, buying recycled related to businesses, I presume that there are some businesses that are just making sure that they're pure procurement departments are being aware of buying recycled products.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work going on in the procurement area for recycled content products and buying more sustainable products, and a lot of research and development going on, especially in the coffee and fast food industry with respect to the type of packaging that they're using. So we're in a transitional period, and you're going to see a lot of change in the next 5 to 10 years, and we're going to have to be open to that change.
We're going to be taking a break, but when we come back, talking about sort of the big picture of recycling as part of, you know, sustainability initiatives, and I want to talk about sustainable materials management is an area where a lot of companies are beginning to understand they can look at not just the short term, but the long term of sustainable materials management and the life cycle of the materials that are being used. We're here with Gloria Hardigree of the Georgia Recycling Coalition. We'll be back to talk with Gloria right after this break.
This is Cheryl Linker, host of the Master Gardener Hour on America's Web Radio, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Join us as we keep things fun and interesting as we educate you in the world of master gardening.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
Do your children know where their food comes from? At ConnectingFarmToFork.com, there's all kinds of ways to help your child understand how 300 million of us here in America stay nourished, clothed, and healthy. Activities, food facts, and farm visits help young people learn about America's hardworking farmers and have lots of fun doing it. Visit ConnectingFarmToFork.com today for a learning experience that'll really grow on you. ConnectingFarmToFork.com, brought to you by the people who care at Feedstuffs Food Link.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Gloria Hardigree of the Georgia Recycling Coalition. We've been talking about lots of different dimensions of recycling, from residential to businesses. And now we want to talk about these broader-based sustainability initiatives. Let's talk about sustainable materials management. That's a phrase and even a discipline that is relatively new, where you have companies in particular looking at the life cycle of materials and at the cost effectiveness of controlling gathering of resources to make the materials to the very end use of recycling and end reuse at the other end of the spectrum. So tell us a little bit about sustainable materials management.
Well, we spoke earlier about shifting our mindsets from being waste managers to being resource managers, and sustainable materials management kind of brings us home to that whole concept. Whereas most waste hierarchies focus on the attention of the end of life of the product, like what do I do with it when I'm done with it and I want to get rid of it, sustainable materials management is a broader focus, and it looks at the importance of the materials life cycle, from the extraction of the material to produce the product, through the production of the product, through the use of the product by the consumer, and then to the end, and then to the end of life, to manage that when you're done with it and want to get rid of it. So all along that chain, it looks at, was there waste involved in the production and was that reduced? Was there energy and water consumed during that production and was that offset? And then at the end of life, worry about, is it going to be reusable or is it going to be recycled? So it's a little bit more broad focus on and a way to look at it to truly be sustainable, because just because you go and buy a product in the grocery store or wherever, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily was created in a sustainable way. Now, there are groups like companies like Walmart that are have caused there to be more thought in this process by only selling products that this process has been thought through. So they're a leader as one of the largest retailers in the world of looking at this approach and requiring the people who they buy from and to have this kind of approach and looking at that. It's also led to some really great things like design for the environment, design for recyclability, and sustainable product certifications. And there's several of those that are now very active in the U.S., where you actually can get certification for a product. So we're advancing and are looking at how we, not only how we use these products at the end of their life, but how they were manufactured to start with.
You know, Gloria, I happen to know of some companies in the state of Georgia, again, that are either based here or have major operations, and some of these companies actually happen to be members of the coalition, but outside of the coalition, I am aware that companies like the Coca-Cola Company and Mohawk Interface and Shaw, the textile giants, have been doing things to look at sustainable materials management for a number of years, some of whom are absolute leaders in various processes. I mean, I know the Coca-Cola Company is a leader in plastics recycling, and I know that Interface has been doing many things for many years to make itself one of the absolutely most recycling-oriented companies in the world. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say Interface. I think everyone in our industry at least knows Interface. They were the pioneers of this whole sustainability movement, and being, you know, here in Georgia, it's been a very interesting process. But our carpet industry is certainly very proactive in this area. Not only are they sourcing materials from a recovered area of recycled materials in the manufacturing of their products, but they're also looking at the end of life of their products and what used carpeting can become at some point. Coca-Cola, obviously involved in research and development constantly in this whole life cycle analysis, sustainable materials management approach. You've probably seen the new plant bottles, relatively new, that are not made from petroleum-based sources, but are made from plant-based sources. Same chemical makeup, still compatible with recycling of those bottles, but having a lower impact environmentally.
Yeah, and some of those companies are actually looking at green building so that some of the structures that they are building for their own manufacturing purposes or for office administration are, you know, more energy efficient. They are using recycled materials. They are, in some cases, passive or active solar energy structures. So, you know, our hats off to those companies which are leading the way. Tell us about eco districts. That's kind of a new, interesting area that's going on. What are eco districts?
Well, that's a very good question. I served on the task force last year in their initial development, and I asked the very same question, what are eco-districts? So we went through a process, and basically it's a strategy with transformative potential for engaging communities in protecting the environment and attracting investment at the same time on a scale that is small enough to innovate but big enough to have meaningful impact. So to be more clear, it's a self-defined area, so it's defined by the community. They're committed to achieving ambitious sustainability performance goals, implementing both large-scale and household-level projects, and tracking the results over time. So what it is basically is you as a community decide, we want to be doing better in sustainability, we want to have better energy efficiency, better water conservation, better materials management, recycling, waste reduction, and we're going to do it in this defined area that's our community. So it can be any type of community, and in Sustainable Atlanta, which is the leader in this in our city and state, went through this whole process. And they recently chose three beta communities that are going to be involved in becoming the first, well, actually Midtown Alliance was our first eco-district in Atlanta. Let's give credit where credit is due. But in expanding that concept, Atlanta University Center, Lakewood Heights, and Lithonia are all going to be the new beta communities for eco-districts. So we're going to be looking in the next few months at seeing how this evolves and how these communities are able to be more sustainable and have more community involvement in the sustainability process.
Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned that, you know, we have been using natural resources at record levels over the last 100 to 200 years. You know, the industrial age launched us into massive consumption of natural resources, and it's only been the last few decades that we've gotten good at recycling. But it seems to me that folks on both sides of the political aisle, or multiple sides of the political aisle in nations where there's more than two major parties, are understanding that, you know, there's economic benefits. So let's talk a little bit about economic impact and what kinds of things the Georgia Recycling Coalition is doing to help us understand economic impact.
Well, the most important thing to know is that Georgia is known in the nation as one of the largest states. In fact, we're considered the second largest state for the infrastructure for recovery and reuse of recyclables. We've been doing a mapping tool with our Environmental Protection Division, and now in partnership with the Georgia Department of Economic Development, that has shown us that there are 120 manufacturers in the state of Georgia and counting who use recycled materials in the production of new consumer products every day. Not only are they using these recovered materials, but they are also creating and sustaining green jobs for Georgians. So it's definitely an economic driver. So when you look at the environmental advantages, yes, they're there. But recycling and waste reduction is an economic driver as well, and we have to be aware of that.
Another really important part of what the Georgia Recycling Coalition does is education-related. Tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that you're doing for the general population and for schools.
We have all kinds of tools and toolkits on our website. Our website is georgiarecycles.org. We have a Catch the Cycle toolkit for schools. The Environmental Protection Agency has a municipal toolkit. We are reviving a sustainable office toolkit. We have a toolkit called Building Multifamily Programs in Georgia, and these are all free and available on our website. We have eco videos, so if you want to drill down and learn a little bit more about some things, some factoids are on our website. And we also are the initiators and facilitators of two national programs, called America Recycles Day in November, and the other one I mentioned earlier, International Compost Awareness Week in May.
I want to reiterate that for listeners out there that want to learn more, you can go to garecycles.org, and the website is a very informative website covering a lot of different areas, covering most of what we talked about today. So go to Georgia Recycles or garecycles.org, and you can learn more about what the Georgia Recycling Coalition is doing. Gloria, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be my guest today on the Business Hour.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
We've been here with Gloria Hardigree, the Executive Director of the Georgia Recycling Coalition. You've been listening to the Business Hour here at America's Web Radio. We're on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week.